everyone, I'm Brian Conley of Hunters HD Gold, and you're listening to Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. This podcast takes a deep dive into what it takes to be a match director, manufacturer, sponsored shooter, or just an everyday shooter trying to win his or her first major. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for watching and listening to Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Before this video podcast or audio podcast starts, there is a warning. This video slash podcast contains strong language and profanity, may not be suitable for children and sensitive adults. So if you're a junior shooter, make sure you get your parents' permission before listening or watching. And until then, sit back and enjoy this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Welcome back to another episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. Today, I am finally sitting down with somebody. We've been trying this for a while, and I say this a lot on a lot of shows I do, but Tony Pignotto, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I appreciate that. Man, we've both been running so crazy. It's like, and today when I yelled out, I was like, let's do it right now, man.
I know. I was like,
I'm excited to be here, man.
Man, give me 38 seconds to get set up.
Yeah, we got about 4 years of stuff to talk about, so this may be a long one.
Well, it might be, but, you know, it may be longer than 4 years because, you know, I want to go back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when did you even start shooting? I mean, when did this happen for you? Is this something you did with your family growing up? What does this look like?
So, I'm an Army guy. You know, I'm a retired Army guy. So
I knew you were military, but I didn't know what.
So we can back all the way up. So I retired from the Army in 2007.
Okay.
I spent a couple years as a contract guy. Nothing super exciting. And then I ended up going to work for BudsGunShop.com.
Okay.
And I went to BudsGunShop.com, and I was the director of training. We had a 6,000-square-foot indoor shooting bay, and we started holding indoor USPSA matches. Now, I've been shooting USPSA for, gosh, a long time, probably 2000, something like that.
So before the military?
Before I retired. Before I retired. So probably, I'd say I probably started shooting USPSA regularly probably 2005, 2006.
So did you ever shoot before the military?
I grew up in Chicago.
Oh.
Yeah. I was an Italian kid from Chicago. I didn't shoot back, you know. My family didn't have a lot of money, so we couldn't afford guns. So that's how I learned to talk shit so much.
You grew up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And went to the military just a way out?
So, interesting story, which is a little known fact that people don't know. So it's great. Let's go back that far. So
I want to get a baseline.
I do this on a lot of my shows. I think it's a pretty funny story. So I joined the Army in 1987. So I grew up in Chicago, had a pretty
87. How old are you?
I'm 54. Okay. I'll be 55.
Because I graduated high school in 89.
Yeah.
So we're about the same age. I'm 52.
Young man.
I am.
That's why you look as young.
It's the hair.
It's a hard 3 years.
It's the hair.
It's been a hard 3 years.
It's the hair. You know, that's why I don't wear a hat.
Yeah, so
I get hats.
Don't give, do nothing
people,
with that
people
hair,
give me hats
keep
all the time.
It,
yeah, like, no, keep I'm good.
Keep that hat.
I give them to
keep
my employees.
But
no, go ahead. I'm sorry. 87.
So I grew up in Chicago. I had a kind of weird childhood. You know, parents were kind of all over the place and, you know, probably not the most. I had fun. I had a lot of fun as a kid. My parents did the best they could, you know, nothing negative about that. It was just a lot of interesting challenges along the way.
Right. Well, we're 70s kids.
Yeah,
a lot of things were going on back in those days.
My parents were separated for like 5 years.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah, it was weird. My mom and dad were both with other people Jesus.
And that's one of those things back in the 70s. There wasn't a lot of divorce that were talked about. That's totally different back then. Yeah. You're right. It wasn't, you know, back then it's like one every probably 30 kids even knew about it. Now it's like one every five. It's like next door. So they found the Lord.
Yeah, they found the Lord, got involved in church, and they got back together. And I spent a little bit of time in that environment with we were going to Assemblies of God Church, ooh, Pentecostal Church, which
that's probably
where I got my charismatic personality.
That's not one of those churches you just sit back and be quiet at.
No, I tell people all the time. I said, you're an atheist. I said, you go sit there for song service in a Pentecostal church. You may not believe in Jesus, but you're going to see somebody.
You're going to see something.
Somebody going to happen.
That's awesome.
And so, like my sophomore year, I was having really bad stomach problems. And they were like, parents were going through a lot of different stuff, and they attribute it to stress. They're like, so the doctors kept saying stress. It's just stress. You know, this is it. You know, it's just, you know, I never did counseling or anything like that. That wasn't the thing you did. You talked to your mom.
No, you got over it.
You went to your friend's house and they stole beer.
That's right.
From your dad. And you
exactly
smoked
right.
cigarettes out of
That's
his.
That's exactly
you know,
right.
That's back when he had the dispenser, like the packs of Marlboros around the fridge. You pull one out. Yeah.
Yes, sir. I remember. the beautiful green color.
Yeah. And so it was interesting is so my junior year went back to school. It got really, really bad, and they brought me to the hospital. It turns out, so this year and a half of complaining about stomach pains, my appendix had actually ruptured and had healed itself off. And so where your appendix is this big, my appendix was surrounded by scar tissue, was this big. And so I ended up missing about 6 months of high school.
Now, did you play sports or something like that?
So I wrestled in high school, played football my freshman year, but I wrestled all the way from like sixth grade all the way through high school.
So wrestling in that situation, nobody was pressing up against that area to know what was going
on? Back then I had abs, so there was stuff in front of it, but it was like a cramp, like a stomach cramp,
okay.
You know, like a, you know, I ate the wrong Mexican food at the sushi restaurant, you know.
They got good sushi Mexican restaurant stuff.
Yeah.
It's just not worth the after price to pay.
Yeah.
But continue.
Yeah. And so when that happened, I remember distinctly, they were like, hey man, listen, because you've missed so much school, you're going to have to be like a fifth year senior. And I was dating a girl at the time that was big thinking about going to an ROTC and stuff. So I remember going to the recruiter with her. And I'm a guy who'd been playing with GI Joes and Army guys stuff since I was, you know, little. And I remember going to the recruiter with her, and I was just sitting there, and the recruiter, she's taking the test, you know, the pretest, and he looks at me and goes, so what's your story? And I go, oh man, I said, I'm going to have to go to high school for another year because I missed because of this, this and that. And he goes, well, actually we got a program right now that you can come in without a high school diploma and you can finish high school in the Army. So very few people know this.
I actually talked to another gentleman on another podcast about this exact same thing. Continue.
And so I was like, really? And he goes, yeah, why don't you take the test? And so I took the practice test and I got like a 68 or a 70 on the practice test.
Okay.
And he's like, so what do you want to do? And on his desk was a skull with a maroon beret. And I was like, I want to do that. And here's what's funny, right? is he's like, oh, so you want to go in the infantry? It's like, absolutely. You know, because I'm like, you know, there's absolutely, it's what I want to do.
Did you know history of family doing this in the past?
No.
Okay.
No,
continue.
No,
I'm sorry.
No. And so so he goes, well, all right. So we go to MEPS. I pass the physical. I go to sit down with a recruiter, and there's no opening. This is how freaking hysterical this is, right? Is that I couldn't qualify for the infantry.
Okay.
So when you go like, hey man, Bobby's gonna go in the Army, he gonna be in the infantry. Bobby can't even get into damn infantry, right? So I go down there and I come back. I'm like a cannon fire direction specialist because there's no slots for what they call the non-grad, non-high school diploma graduate,
right?
In the infantry at that month. And so I come back and I'm super bummed, right? The recruiter's like, name was Ed Panis was his name, and he retired as a sergeant major. And
your parents had no idea you were doing this.
No. Well, they were like, all right, whatever, man. You know, I mean, they were just
but they
like,
didn't know he was going to recruiter and actually
Like, actually, like, hey, we're going to MEPS. I'm like, hey, mom, dad, I'm joining the Army. They're like, of course, my mom. You know, mom's so theatrical. She's like, well, I always knew you were going to go in the service. I just knew it. But do they know? They know about, of course, my mom is stereotypical Italian. Bless her soul. She's passed away about 3 years ago. She's like, but do they know about your bad knees and your asthma? And I'm like, I don't have fucking asthma. Like, I've been a wrestler. Like she said, but about your bad knees, you got the Ashgood slaughter. Do they know about mom? Stop. Right. I'm like, you're not talking to anybody. Right.
I'm so confused between Italian and Jewish right now. But continue.
Literally, she's like, it's so I go down and I come back with my contract and he goes, well, what's wrong? I said, well, I couldn't get in the infantry. And he goes, well, here's what we're going to do. So he pulls up, you know, at this time it was a desktop computer, and he makes a phone call. He says, hey man, so we're going to tear up this contract. He still had paper contracts back then. I'm going to tear up this contract. You're going back down next month. So I go down back down next month and I get infantry. And I'm like, hell yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Here I go. And so I go to, I literally went to basic training and infantry training. And then my first duty assignment was Berlin when the wall was still up.
Yes. That didn't come down until 89. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So literally, I'm 87 to 89. I'm in a communist country, East Germany. Like you tell young kids that are like, yeah, I was in East Germany. And they're like, shut up. You're stupid. You have dementia. There's no such thing. It's like, no, there actually was. We used to have to take a train to go train in West Germany. And it'd be all those people sending out their AK-47s and like, you know, the Russian uniforms.
But what was that like during that time? That's when I was in high school. That's all that stuff. You know,
Oh,
my gosh.
Yeah. What was so cool about it is I go, here I am. I'm a blue collar kid from Chicago.
Yeah.
And I go, you know, my dad worked in a printing factory. My mom drove a school bus and delivered a Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
I go to Berlin, where drinking age is like, if you can reach the bar,
exactly.
If you can reach the bar and hold the mug in at least two hands, you're in.
You're good to go.
And this was back in the day when, so my base pay was like $454 a month. But in Deutschmarks, that was double because it was 2-for-1 exchange. And Deutschmarks were like monopoly money.
Okay.
Like you didn't even realize those were real money. Like you take a cab, go downtown. And they're like, and you're like, yeah, here's the monies. I don't know what I gave. I just gave monies, right? Just hand them shit, right? And it was like, oh, thank you very much. You know, danke. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, dude, just gave that guy like $7,000. No idea. But it also was a time that $454 didn't go very far.
That's right.
You know, and I remember, so when I first got there, back up a little bit, I get there and I spend 6 months in a high school program. Like I go to class every day. Like I get to the duty assignment. And because I had this in my contract, I would go to the education center and I would sit in class, you know, for 8 hours a day and take like, it was condensed versions of courses. So it wasn't a GED program. It was actually a high school diploma program.
Right.
And finished up the program and then went, you know, I spent actually it's probably like 4 months. And then I went right back into being, you know, operational guy in my unit. And lo and behold, there that was.
So you were there when the wall came down. Yeah.
Here's what's really funny is so when the wall came down, like November, I want to say of 89, was it something? No,
was it 89? Yeah.
PCS'd in July of 89 back to, I went to Fort Campbell after that. And I remember I had a buddy of mine, name was Whitlow, and Whitlow was short, kind of chunky, pudgy guy, had a little bitty mustache. He talked like this. And I remember Whitlow. I called Whitlow one time when I was back at Fort Campbell. And he goes, Sarge, you missed it. He goes, man, when the wall came down, he's like, you went to the club. And, you know, normally you go to the club, like, and this is the European, this time zone. You go to the club and there's dudes lined up against the wall.
Okay.
A girl comes in and that's like, you know, that's, you know, you come out there and you pitch your, you know, my sales pitch, you know, right. Hey, check me out. This is what I got, blah, 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 blah. And she either goes, sure, or she moves on to the next guy down the line. He said, when the wall came down, he goes, the clubs were lined with blonde haired, blue eyed, you know,
wow.
East German, Eastern Bloc country supermodels that are like, where are you from in America? And he's like, dude, I got like four girlfriends. he goes, hey, Pete, and you know me, I'm not an attractive fella. And I was like,
that's amazing.
Old Whitlow, man. Yeah, he had a run of it. I was actually back in Fort Campbell.
That's back in the dangerous days of AIDS as well. That was not a good time in the 80s.
He'd have died happy. Exactly. He wouldn't have gave a shit.
That's a lot going on back
Whitlow's
in the
80s. Whitlow's the guy that you go out to the club with him, and you knew that after about four or five times and no every girl saying no to him at dancing, Whitlow's the guy's gonna get in a fight and he's gonna ruin it for the rest of him.
Really?
Yeah, somebody's swinging that way. He's going, hey man, this son of a bitch here, I'm hitting him. You know,
And what was your temperamental like that did you have a temper as well?
No, I'm still
happy go lucky. I like that.
Yeah, I don't.
I didn't know. Some people, you know, I think from what I've talked to, there's two sides of that coin. There's not really much in the middle.
Yeah.
unless you just push somebody way too far.
And I mean, obviously anybody, you know, if you're out with your wife or great friends or somebody, you know, there's some threat.
Right.
But as far as just going out, like, you know, I'm going to redneck fight everybody. No, I mean, it was,
that's just an Alabama thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a different thing about over there is you get in a fight with somebody and then the Polizei come and the Polizei had this baton that had like a spring in it, right? And so they'd hit you with it once, and that son bitch would come back and hit you six more times.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it was a gift that kept on giving, man. And they did not, they'd whoop your ass in a minute. They did not care, man. And then you got like Turkish sector, you got the French sector, the British sector, and the American sector. This is because this was an army of occupation in Berlin, and we just split it. And so it was, you can go over these different sectors, and it was literally like a little Britain. You go, it's like a little France, you know, little France. You know, there's, it was interesting as we do any training we did with cross national training stuff, or cross country training we do with guys. And, you know, the French had little wine bottles and stuff in their, their rations, which was super dope, you know, because we're like, when they're like, oh, but it is what it is. It's like, yeah, you have a cheese and crackers.
That's amazing.
But it was super fun. It was a really neat time to be in, and
Wanted to do the one term and get out?
Well, no, I did. I retired.
Yeah.
I retired after 20 years. And
20 years.
Yeah. So what was interesting is I stayed in all the way through, retired in 2007. And it's interesting because I retired in 2007. I retired as an E8. And it was a super rewarding time for me. I felt like my military service and my time was just so rewarding. I think it did a lot for me. I think I grew a lot. I think I learned a lot.
Okay.
You learn a lot about leadership. You learn a lot about management. I learned equally as much from amazing leaders that I had as I did from people that sucked.
Okay.
I joke with people about where I am now in my career and in my life, that was literally my Mr. Miyagi time, like my wax on, wax off. There was amazing people that taught me the importance of knowing people, taught me importance of knowing details about people, which I think makes you a more effective leader and a more effective manager, and then understanding the difference between management and leadership, and how to connect with somebody on a personal level and learn things about. Probably a real quick story, but I had a sergeant major of mine at Fort Bragg, and he came up to me, and it was such, and I remember this conversation like, and it resonates with me, and still I can still hear his voice. So we're doing an in-ranks inspection, and at the time I was a weapons squad leader in an airborne infantry company in the 82nd Airborne Division. And he comes up to me, and we're doing ranks inspections, you know, deployments and stuff are coming up, and so they're doing, you know, you start to look at people's gear and check things out, and then smart leaders who've spent time in a combat environment are adding in things outside of just regulatory inspections that are going to develop leadership. And so I remember the sergeant major comes up to me, and he's inspecting my squad, and my platoon sergeant standing behind him. And he goes, "How you doing there, Sergeant Pignato?" And I go, "Oh, I'm good, Sergeant Major." He goes, "Good, good. Uniform looks good. You look sharp. You look fit." He's like, "So this is your team here to your left, your squad. He goes, you know a lot about your squad." I said, "Roger, Sergeant Major." Okay. He goes, "Good, good." He goes, and he's looking like this. He's just kind of looking off. And he goes, and he's looking at my uniform, picking on some stuff here. And he goes, "Let me ask you a question, Sergeant." He goes, "How many married fellas you got in your squad?" And I just look at him like dumbfounded. I thought he was going to ask me about some weapon shit. Like, you know, "Hey, so do this. How do you respond to that? What about this? What's the maximum effective range of this? What's the cyclic rate of fire of that?" And I go, I think two, Sergeant Major. He go, and he looks me in the eye, asks me the question. Then he looks away like he's distracted. He goes, "Well, why don't you look down there and ask him, Sarge?" So I look down there and go, "Hey, how many of y'all are married?" And three guys stick their hands up. And he goes, "Oh, good." Looks back at me. He's looking at stuff. He's checking things out. He goes, "All right, good, good." He goes, "Let me ask you a question. Specialist Horton," he goes, "what's his wife's name?" And I go, "I don't know, Sergeant Major." He goes, "That's okay. That's all right. Just go down there and ask him." Ask him right quick. And I go, "Hey, Horton, what's your wife's name?" He's like, "Oh, Maria." He goes, "Oh, good, good, Sergeant." He looks around. He goes, "Does Specialist Horton have any kids?" And I go, he goes, "I know. Ask him, Sarge." "Special Horton, you have any kids?" "I do, Sergeant P. I've got two kids. I've got a son and a daughter, Michael and Julie." It's like, "Okay, okay." He goes, "Do you know why I'm asking you those questions, Sarge?" And I go, "Negative, Sergeant Major." And he gets back and looks me dead in the eye. And this is a multi-tour in Vietnam guy. And he looks at me and goes, because in combat, you're going to ask these men to put their lives on the line. And he goes, and not everybody's going to live. And he goes, and if you have to write Specialist Horton's wife a letter, tell her that her husband gave his life in combat. He goes, don't you think you should know her fucking name?
Wow.
And I just looked at him and it resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and he goes, have a good day, Sarge. And he just walks away. And I mean this, I mean, you're like, and but think about the importance of that.
Yes. You know,
think about the importance of that. I mean, especially in that, you know, in a unit, in an environment like that, in a combat environment, like, but also think about that from a personal perspective.
In a management lifestyle.
In a management
every day.
Lifestyle.
Yeah. People you're over. Customers.
Knowing customers, knowing that relationship, which is why I guess you think about that. It's from an experience level. It's a relationship level. And then you continue to expand on that from the connectivity to people,
right,
the connective tissue between people. So it was that, to me, that's probably one of the most memorable moments that I had from a leadership development standpoint that I thought was just incredible.
Did you ever see him again?
Well, I saw him again after I'd retired. He was the honorary sergeant major of the Airborne School.
Okay.
And his name was Sergeant Major Kravis Tabron. And he was in a book I read when I was a young guy called Charlie Rangers. And he was a guy, he's the sergeant major that would walk up in the field, like you'd be sitting there in the field doing something, you know, practicing or doing drills or, you know, field exercises where you practice stuff you're going to do in a combat environment or things you hope you're going to do in a combat environment. And he'd just come out of nowhere. He'd just walk out of the woods. I always look sharp. And he'd be like, how's it going, Airborne? How's it going? How's it going? How's it going, combat? What's going on?
Did you enjoy jumping out of planes?
I did.
Did you?
And yeah, I enjoyed that. It's what's funny is there was a time in my life, like right after I retired, like when you're in airborne units, I don't care if you get on an aircraft.
Okay.
And they're doing, you know, body shots off, okay, you know, off each other.
Okay.
Right. And you can smell weed coming out of the cockpit. You don't care. Cause right. I got two things that are going to get me to the ground one way or another. And if those things don't work, if my primary and my reserve parachute don't work, well, then it just wasn't my day.
Yeah.
So, but then I started getting on civilian flights and I was like, I can't see shit. They shut the door. I can't walk up there and say, what's up, man? How y'all doing? And I don't know what's going on in there. I mean, these dudes can be been up all night. And, hey, we just landed in Vegas, bro. We got you, dude.
Exactly.
And I don't know. It could be up there.
So that was more nerve wracking to you going on the commercial flight.
It was. Yeah. Uh-huh. It was.
The first time the door shut and like going, I'm missing a parachute.
Yeah. It was probably a couple year time frame where it was just like, just because, you know, you low level flight and all kinds of other crazy stuff you do in airborne units. And then you get in a civilian aircraft. And if they're doing low level flight, some shit's wrong.
Right.
But it's like, I don't know, man, you trust the Air Force pilots, you know, because they do that stuff a lot. Right.
Of course.
And they're pretty stringent on it.
Did you ever have any kind of scary moments on a parachute?
No,
okay,
no, no. I was always about the size I am now.
Okay.
So, which means I was like, when I was performing jump master duties, I'd end up being like one of the last guys out of the aircraft. And I was always, I always hit the ground like a bag of shit. And I did, but I'm literally like Kung Fu Panda. Like I'd be like, boop, 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 boop. And I'd be like, stop. I'm like, and you just 4-point check. You're like left arm, right arm, 5-point, left arm, right arm, left leg, right leg, neck. Good. All right, man, let's go.
That was it.
Yeah.
A 5-point check.
It's funny is there was this kid. What was his name? Here's where it makes the story better is that I ran into this kid's mom and dad in like Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
I was wearing like a 325 Airborne Infantry t-shirt. And she's like, our son was in 325. And she goes, I said, well, what was his name? It turns out that I know this kid was in like my platoon or another platoon. And I remember we had a jump we had done and it was a evaluation jump, like a combat evaluation jump. And I remember we got put out over trees and, I'm sitting there, I get my shot. Lucky I go like right through the trees, don't hit nothing. And I like hit the one soft tuff of grass. And I'm like, phew, like a little angel sang. I got up, it smelled like lilacs. Like it was beautiful. People are like hanging off shit. There's like, ow. And I remember coming, I remember our first sergeant came to the assembly area without nothing. Like the dude had a helmet. He didn't have shit else. And they were like, and it was his last jump in the division. He was, our first sergeant was retiring at the time. And Murray goes, hey, first sergeant, where's all your shit? He's like, it's in the goddamn tree. You know, it's like, he was so mad. So I remember, God, I cannot remember the kid's name, but it'll come to me. But I walk up and I hear this, hell, hell, right? And I walk over and I go, hey, who's that? And he goes, hey, Sergeant P, it's me. And I'll say his name is Tybee.
Okay.
And I go, I said, well, what are you doing, Tybee? He's like, man, I'm caught up in here in this tree. And I was like, lower your reserve parachute. And then, you know, just climb down outside a reserve parachute and just stay here at the tree because all your sensitive items and stuff are up in the tree. And he goes, well, how are you lowering my reserve parachute, Sergeant? And I look and I can see it. You know, I can see the bottom of his reserve parachute and it's probably 15 feet in the air.
Okay.
Well, it's dark. You know, yeah. I'm wearing night vision devices and I'm thinking it's just bunched up. So as he starts to slide down, he's going to get about 6 or 7 feet off the ground and let go and go. Well, I didn't realize it was completely elongated. That was the bottom of the sumbitch.
Oh, no.
So it was 15 feet up to get to the bottom of his reserve parachute. Right. So he's like, okay, Sergeant. I said, all right, man, I'm going to go get my stuff. I'll be back in a few minutes. He's like, all right. And as I walk, I get probably 3 steps away in here and I hear zzzzt. And he's like, oh. And I'm like, hey, man, you good? And he's like, and it did. I look up and that thing's still 15 feet in the air. Oh, and no. Of course, I'm telling this story to these parents.
Right.
And they go, you're Sergeant Pignato.
Oh, no.
And they were like, they knew exactly who I was. So it was like just random people you meet like in a damn cafe in upstate New York, I think. And it was like, he's like, oh, our son was in there. Turns out I was like, let me tell you a story. And they were like, oh, you're Sergeant. Talk about you.
There's a bag 20 feet in the air. The guys on the ground. How does he get his bag out of the tree?
Oh, no. They just end up going, they go back. They'll get it all in the tree later. But because it's a training exercise.
But I mean, like in a situation like they just.
Oh, like in a combat situation? You start cutting shit off and get it down to the ground as fast as you can. Because nobody cares about the parachute or the harness and stuff. Yeah. As long as you can get your kid out of there.
Yeah, because if your bag's up there with all the sensitive information, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. You'll stay right there with it because, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, I got my rifle. I got. You know, magazines that are on me, but all the rest of my shit's right there.
Wow.
I'll jump on that sumbitch and ride it out. I'll ride that thing all the way down the tree, man, because I carry a lot of yummies, man. I'm not going hungry. You can shoot at me and do all kinds of other crazy shit, put me in trees, but if I go hungry, I'm mad. I'm quitting.
I'm get angry.
I'll be like, nope, they're right over there. I quit.
Yeah. Amazing. Let's take a quick commercial break, man. And let's get more information. That's amazing. Thanks.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Kona Gold. Kona Gold is a premier lifestyle brand for those who work hard and play harder. There are many hemp companies out there that get lost in the crowd, but Kona Gold sets the gold standard with its premier line of products. When traveling all around with a Magical Mystery Tour to different matches, I travel around with lots of different flavors, including pink grapefruit, candy apple, and vanilla cherry. Make sure to stop by and get some for yourself. They are all zero calories, zero sugar, use organic hemp, and are THC and CBD free. Competitive shooters love them because there's no shakes, no headaches, and no crash. When you order from KonaGoldHemp.com, make sure to use discount code HUNTERSHD for another 20% off.
So, you're in a situation where you did 20 years in the military.
Yeah.
You learned a lot. Got a lot of great stories. I'm sure we could go do a whole other podcast stories alone, but that's why I love talking to you because your entertainment value of the way you tell stories is just amazing. I mean, it always has been since I first met you. But, you know, you get out. It's time to go. It's time to, you know, not doing any more tours, not doing any more trainings. I'm getting out. And the whole world is open to your door, or where's your mind at?
So I first, there's a natural, especially when you're an infantry guy or you're a combat arms guy, is you, all right, and it's really interesting is because there's so much more that I know now of my skill set than, meaning understanding that leaders, you know, enlisted and commissioned officers have an incredible, like after a military career, mm-hmm. have an incredible ability to adapt. Like you can take 95% of your senior enlisted guys and you can put them as the chief operating officer for BMW and they're going to be successful.
Really?
Because of the fact they understand that, you know, if you're still, when you start talking about the P&L, you got to forget that there's another P that's in there and that's mm-hmm. people. And throughout a military career, you know, most people didn't even worry about their evaluations, didn't worry about their ratings or anything like that. Because the fact that if you take care of people, and it's a similar in a business environment, you take care of your people, if you hire the right people, if you empower them, you train them, you mentor them, and you lead them, your P&L is a result of your people.
That's correct.
And so, you know, one of the things when I first got out is there, when you first retire, you're like, okay, what can I do? Okay, I can do gun stuff. I'm a gun guy. I can do gun stuff. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at contract stuff, contract gigs, and I ended up getting hired by a company called EDS, which is it's completely not a gun gig. And I spent 2 years working for this company, and it was actually a contract for the recruiting command.
Okay.
And the job was called, you're an applications trainer. And so you had a region of the United States that you worked with the recruiting command. They sent you like 8 weeks of this school to learn, and recruiting command's got incredible budget. And so they developed this entire market analysis software and this complete leader toolkit, which was, it's incredible. Meaning I could look at a high school. I could pull data from that high school and I could tell you that high school, how many people, what percentage of that high school goes on to college, or the percentage of that high school that goes on to college. Like it's like a dime report. Like what percentage of high school goes on to college with financial aid, with student loans, or can pay outright. Mm-hmm. And of that group, I can even dial it even further into a segment to know of this segment, you know, who graduated high school on time, had this grade point average, had took this many student loans. How many of them graduated in 4 years? How many graduated in 4.5 years, 4.7 mm-hmm. years, didn't graduate, et cetera. College, high school retention rates, all this data. And it helped design marketing strategies, which USAREC does, uses marketing strategies to be able to go in and deliver a product that would be a solution. You know, identify, like all of us do in sales, you identify needs and interests. You explain your programs and then you show that union between your programs and their needs and interests.
Right.
And so for me, something clicked. Like when you're doing, you know, operational analysis or target analysis, or all these other things, and you don't realize that and military operations order is very similar to a business plan. And analysis is analysis. You know, mm-hmm. when you're analyzing things and digging into deep details to be able to effectively engage that target or effectively accomplish that mission, it's the same thing. And it's skill sets that many, many leaders and soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines have been doing, did for 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
Right.
And then they get out and they're like, oh, I got to be a trigger puller because I don't really know much about business. Well, it's not true. You know a shit ton about business.
Exactly.
The only thing you need to learn is the acronyms. If mm-hmm. you could learn the acronyms and understand the terms and understand what this means and how the skill set you already have and developed is applicable, you're unstoppable because your work ethic. I mean, many people spent 20 plus years of their life in selfless service. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing you got to be careful of is that outside of the military, it's selfish service.
Yes.
Like, it's like, cool. Cause you first come out and you're like, oh my God, you hired me. That's so cool. Well, hey, so how much are you going to pay me? I'm going to pay you shit. And you're going to work like a convict because I know you're just happy to be here. And mm-hmm. there's some companies that take advantage of people like that.
Right.
So being smart and understanding that and knowing that what you bring to the table is extremely valuable.
Right.
People can go to, you know, insert name of Ivy League school. Well, at the end of that Ivy League school, sure, they can have leader training for a weekend, mm-hmm. but they haven't spent 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 years
yes.
in intense environments with a diversified group of people.
You know what they don't teach? How to handle objections.
Yeah.
And that's what I found out.
Yeah.
Get a lot of people that come out with all these degrees and everything else. But you, when you tell somebody, no, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And they just don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
They don't know how to overcome that objection to find out. They just need more information.
Well, it's one of the things that I found so great. It's now take that application and start talking about customer experience.
Exactly.
And talking about product design and then being able to actually identify what is it's like, I remember talking to my father-in-law,
okay,
you know, understanding the difference between needs and interests. My father-in-law thought it was absolutely fascinating that I jumped out of planes. Mm-hmm. He had no desire to do that shit.
None.
So is it interesting or is it something that I need? What is that? And how do you create that something that I find incredibly interesting that also benefits me? So that's the, I think that's, but what happens is nobody asks questions. Nobody spends time in conversation. Mm-hmm. Establishment of rapport is dead. It's like customer service,
right?
It's, I mean, post COVID, you go to a restaurant and you have shitty service and you're like, well, you know, hey man, so would you, I ordered the pork chop, but that looks like chicken. It is chicken, but at least it's here.
Yep. It's 10 minutes longer than normal.
It's 10 minutes longer than normal, but it could have, last time I was here, it was 20.
Yes.
Yeah. And
the acceptance of that is exactly dumbfounding for people like me and you, I guess. It's like
any of it is. And that's where I think it's, and I, what's funny is I was sitting there with my dad, I bought my dad an iPad and we were watching Cheers. And I've always used that analogy of Cheers. And it's like, I will go to a bar and have a Coors Light, not because the fact that it's the cheapest Coors Light, but the fact that they know I drink Coors Light. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that's the difference is you create that connection. You create that loyalty because mm-hmm. people want to connect. They want to support a brand. They want to support people that they understand and they can connect with who are transparent. Yep. If it's smoke and mirrors and fluff, you know, it's called fake followers, you know?
That's right.
Like you're just here for the free shit. Well, if you're here for team free shit, there's another place over there.
Yep.
But you know, building a brand, which you've done an incredible job of that. You've got an amazing, like, I can't turn around, man. I can be in Thailand and walk up to a hut and there's a dude with green lenses. I mean, it's literally, I mean, there's Hunter's HD gold everywhere, dude. I mean,
I've surrounded myself around a lot of cool people that have helped me, you know, take the brand to different areas across the United States and now the world.
Well, so here's the thing about it though, dude.
I don't have the military, but I have the same customer service experience for 20 plus years. I learned what not to say to people a long time ago.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing in the military, same way.
Oh, don't say that again.
it's the relationship aspect.
That's what it's about.
It's kind of like at, you know, at STI or Staccato, mm-hmm. you know, I've told people this before. I had the easiest job in the world when I spent, you know, 2 years as the CMO of Staccato. And I had the easiest job in the world because we had a great product.
Right.
I didn't have to design that product. I didn't invent that product. Right. All I had to do was tell people about the product. If you have a great product mm-hmm. and you're confident and you have a great product, which you do, you have a great product. And then the cool thing about that is you let people experience your product. And then guess what? They become a fan of your product. They share your product. And the transaction, too many people are focused on the transaction.
Right.
And they don't understand that transaction is the result of a relationship.
It's the result of the experience. That's right.
You can't sit here and tell me that your glasses provide incredible acuity and fast acquisition of targets and clarity when I'm shooting competitive shooting sports. You could say all that.
Yeah.
And it's like when people talk about building guns, it's like, well, if the gun sucked, we would have built one.
Right.
We wouldn't have built, you know, we wouldn't have built 36,000. We wouldn't have sold 12,000 to cops. So it's the same thing with you. You have a great product.
Right.
You have a great customer service and customers have an incredible customer experience and people want to continue to support that. And as long as it all starts with a good product. Well, if you have a shit product, it's bullshit.
No, it does. It doesn't work. I've told people a long time ago, you can, no matter what you have, you got to stand behind it. You got a product that's going to be there because customer service is everything.
Yeah. What percentage of people walk into a restaurant and go, so this food sucks, the customer service sucks, but fuck it, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Nobody does it.
I know. You're right. it's just don't work that way. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I met you. Mm-hmm. We were in SHOT Show mm-hmm. and you were there and I was going to meet with, say hi to John, because we had talked a little bit about scouting, of course. Yeah. And all of a sudden you were there. You were running the camera, you're doing all this stuff. And I was immediately drawn because John's got this line of people, you know, autographs, all this kind of stuff he's dealing with. And you're over there just telling jokes, having fun.
Yeah.
And all the attention's like, over here now.
You want to hear something funny about that?
That's what I know. That's what I picked up. I'm like going, John's the guy in front of the camera, but you're the guy getting all the attention behind the scenes. This was interesting to me.
Well, here's what's funny about. So I John and Jim Scouten, and Jim was an amazing mentor of mine, as is John. John's a super close friend of mine. He's like family to me. I learned so much from them because I came from being a ShamWow guy at Bud's Gun Shop to being to where Jim looked at me and goes, remember, you're not selling anything. You're connecting with that guy on the other side of the television, and you're connecting him with the story you're telling. And it was an amazing transition for me, which helped me learn a whole bunch. And it was so I would joke around with them is that I was Larry.
Okay.
So you got Mo and Curly.
Yes.
Right? Those stooges are always going to be known.
That's right.
I was Larry.
Yep.
Like you got Jim and John Scouten. I'm Larry. Larry could be Shemp.
Yep.
Like, and so it was it was funny. It's I would joke with John and Jim about that. And we used to get Jim just used to crack up. I'm like, I'm fucking Larry. It's like a Larry. I mean, I could have long hair one day, I could be black hair one day. I mean, I'm just fucking Larry, right? Yep. And it got to be fun, but it was such a great honor to work with them. And I learned so much, and I value that relationship to this day.
Yeah.
I value that experience. Again, cause coming back, you know, when I started at Bud's, I was working in the training group and just teaching and training, teaching classes, running USPSA matches. We started a club there.
Right.
And I remember Bud walked in one day, he goes, "Hey man, listen." He goes, and he has two partners, and he goes, "These some bitches here done bought these damn Turkish shotguns." And he goes, "They're supposed to be like a Benelli." He goes, "Well, they done committed us to about 5,000 these damn shotguns." And he goes, "Ain't nobody ever heard of them." He goes, "I ain't never heard of them." He's like, "So why don't you go over in that damn training room right there and do some type of damn video, and you tell people about these some bitches, and we'll try to email it out or put it on FaceTube or U-Book or something." And I said, "Okay." And so I literally go in the range. I lay out a table like I'm teaching a class. Mm-hmm. And I lay out a table, and I've got these Gerson MC312 shotguns, which are like basically a Benelli copy. It's an inertia-driven gun. And I go in there, and I shot probably a flat of ammo, like 250 rounds out of these things. I'm like, these things are pretty fucking good.
Right.
And so I take literally four target sticks, like USPSA target sticks, right?
Okay.
And I zip tie them together, and I put a Sony Handycam on there, and I press record, and I walk around the front of us, and I don't even have a lapel mic. I don't have nothing. Right. I've got a Sony Handycam mic, and I walk in front of the camera, and I go, "Hi, folks. This is Tony from BudsGunShop.com. Today, I'm here to talk about a product called the Gerson MC312 shotgun." And I start going through it just fine. It was about a 6 or 8 minute long video. I get to the end of the video. I'm like, well, I got to say some type of an outro or something. And I get to the end of the video. I go, "Remember, folks, stay safe, train hard, and win the fight." And I come to position of attention. I walk around behind that camera, and I turn it off. And you can see the original video. We sold like 15,000 of them damn shotguns.
Oh, my gosh.
And Bud goes, he's watching that video right here. And Bud is exactly what you'd imagine Bud would look like.
Okay.
And super good guy. Hysterical. Just a hysterical man. And super smart guy, too. And he's sitting there like this, and he's watching this video, and he turns to his partner. He's like, "Y'all got this son of a bitch here doing the wrong thing." And they moved me to the marketing department directly after that. And so I go into the marketing department. It's me, you know, a retired first sergeant with about, you know, 150 college credits, no degree.
Okay.
And a 25-year-old self-taught video editing graphics guy.
Yep.
That's the marketing department for $200 million a year, BudsGunShop.com.
Right.
Me and this dude. And we started doing videos, product promotion videos, segmenting those products. I'd sit there, I'd talk about a Terran tactical base pad.
Right.
And we'd send an email out to people who own Glocks. We'd talk about, you know, this ammo or this scope or this optic or whatever. And we would send it out to that segment and generated a bunch of money from it. And so when I first got over there, I realized that I was like, okay, I need to get smarter. Like, I need to get smarter from the business side of the house. Like, I understand, okay, you know, stand on a street corner with a pocket full of rock and be like, "All right, man, rock's $25 and then I'm gonna make $35. I'm gonna be like, okay, I got that. I understand that. That's how I grew up, right? Mm-hmm. But I need to understand the business acumen. And so I decided I was gonna go back to school full time. So at 40 years old, I decided to go back to school full time. 2.5 years later, I graduate with a degree in management with a concentration in marketing. And
what state was this in?
It was in Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah.
So okay. I go to school full time while I'm the director of marketing for BudsGunShop.com.
Okay.
Traveled around, started all kinds of different things. Team Buds, you know, we had a big Hummer raft. Mm-hmm. We had a whole shooting team of people down in Texas. And I used to drive down to Texas every year and shoot a couple matches and still setting up vending areas, you know, like old school vending stuff. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from college in March of 2015. And one April, I left Buds and I started my own consulting firm doing marketing consulting in the firearms industry.
So you left Buds.
Yep.
What'd they think about that?
Well, I knew where I wanted to be.
Okay.
From a career perspective. And Buds was incredibly great opportunity for me. Still wonderful friends with the president of BudsGunShop.com. And I'd been working at this macro level, this humongous juggernaut.
Okay.
I mean, they are the most successful online gun retailer in the United States, if not the world. I mean, there's back in this day, man, you're talking about, you know, 150,000 unique hits on a website a day,
mm-hmm.
like incredible reach. And, I felt like I had a lot of macro, like I knew big picture stuff, like how to, you know, email segmentation, which is all stuff that was new at this time. And so, but I wanted to go do micro stuff. I wanted to go work with the single retail partner, the guy who, you know, made holsters, the guy who had one location range, mm-hmm. the guy who just started a website. So I spent, and simultaneously when I left Buds, I get a call from Taryn Butler, and Taryn's like, hey man, so shooting USA.
Hold on a second. Continue. I'm sorry. That's pretty funny.
So shooting USA is looking for a host, and I'm going to tell John Scott about you. And so I get on the phone with John Scout, and then he's like, so, hey man, do you have any type of an audition reel or a sizzle reel of anything you've done in front of the camera? And I go, well, yeah. I said, you just go to BudsGunShop.com. I said, I have hundreds of videos. And he goes, oh, you're that Tony. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, all right, no problem. I literally went down to Franklin and read that day, and we shot camera.
That's where I was getting ready to go because, you know, being in Kentucky, I was wondering where the Tennessee connection came from.
And so I used to drive down, we would shoot an episode and I'd drive back to Kentucky. So I did that.
In the Bowling Green area?
I lived in Lexington.
Lexington. Okay, cool. A little bit farther drive then.
Oh yeah. It was cool because I'd go down there, stay overnight and you know, they paid travel and stuff, but it's how we became it was really cool going to SHOT Show and stuff. So simultaneously while I'm on this TV show, I'm a consultant in the industry. So I would go in and I would work with companies on, hey, let's get you to this level. And then when you get to this level, cut them loose. And then I'd pick them back up after they got, you know, on the fringe of the next level. Mm-hmm. And so I end up doing, I'm at TriggerCon and I'm doing some videos and I end up doing a video. We had started a Shooting USA Uncut, which was sort of like video casting. And I meet Nate Horvath and Buck Pearson from then STI. And I always thought STI was they just had so much potential and it was just poorly run. I think they made a really great product. I think they had a great idea. I think they had an incredible performance on their product, but it's like, you know, it's like Apple didn't make the first, you know, cell phone, you know, it's they just needed something. When I met Nate, I knew he was a Marine Corps veteran and Buck was the, was one of the business development guys, and he was a Marine. So they had some veterans in there in that space. And I knew Dave Cupp and I knew a bunch of people in the company. Mm-hmm. And so I did an interview with Nate and he was talking about, you know, he's trying to talk to me about the 2011 platform and the modular frame polymer grip. And I was like, dude, I've been shooting these guns since 95. I got it.
Right.
And we ended up doing an interview, had a great time. And I remember I walked off there and I said, hey man, congratulations. You know, I think you've got a really, really great opportunity with this company. I said, you know, you guys have always made the world's best shooting handguns. You know, they just don't work all the time. And he looked at me and I remember he looked at me and shook my hand. He said, well, they work now and they're continuing to get better. And I was like, super excited, man. I wish you the best of luck. And, you know, again, I'll keep in contact with you. Mm-hmm. If you ever need anything, let me know. A couple of days later, insert again, Taryn Butler gives me a call and goes, hey man, so STI is looking for like some marketing help. And I was like, well, perfect, because I had a client dropping off. I was like, cool. So I give him a call. So I called up Nate. And Nate was like, I don't need a consultant. I need a CMO and I need you in Texas. So we spent a probably that, 2 hours on the phone.
That's a big phone call at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Kentucky. Things were good, bro. Yeah. You know, like I had a consulting firm.
Everything was great. The shipping USA is good. Everything's great. You're traveling.
I've been on the show for four years. Things were great. Just, you know, owed about $100,000 on the lake house. Mama bought me a new pontoon boat for my birthday.
Nice.
Things, you know, when you're a consultant.
You're relaxed.
Oh, when you're a consultant, there's a difference
there. Once you're happy and you get a relaxed moment.
And you own your own stuff.
Yes.
Clients were good. Money was doing well. And I was like, you know, Fridays I was at the lake and, you know, anyway. So I said, okay, well, I'm interested to hear more about it. And he said, can you, you have a resume? I said, sure. So I sent him a resume. He sent me an email back, said, can you do an actual formal interview tomorrow? I said, sure. And this was on a Thursday. So Wednesday we had our first call. Thursday we did this and had a deeper conversation with him, went through my resume. Gave him referrals, gave him, you know, president of BudsGunShop.com, mm-hmm. other people in the industry, Jim Scouten, you know, other people I'd known, Taryn. And he said, hey, can you come down and like you to meet our team? And actually, let's talk in greater detail. So I remember I flew down there and I was supposed to be there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And
it's not Houston. It's not Dallas. It's not San Antonio. No. It's in the middle of
Georgetown.
Georgetown.
Yeah,
Georgetown.
Georgetown, Texas.
Which is like, there's not a lot of stuff around there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny is Georgetown Cedar Park Leander is one of the is one of the fastest growing.
Is it really?
It's oh my God.
Okay.
I mean, it's incredible what property value is.
Because right I came through there one time and I was like going,
oh no, come down through Salado or back in the woods there, man. Yeah. It's
I said, I don't know where I'm going, but we'll get there.
But it's a lot. It's growing super, super fast. One of the fastest growing, you know, areas of that suburbs of Austin. Mm-hmm. So came down, did a tour, you know, we got to talking and this and made me an offer. And I remember I looked at him, I said, I'll start in 3 weeks. And I went back and told mom, I said, hey, man, what do you think about going back to Texas? She was like, yeah, let's light this son of a bitch on fire, ride the smoke out. And I literally put a sign in the yard at the lake house. I took all that furniture out of the lake house. I loaded it in a U-Haul trailer. I drove back to Texas and I lived in an apartment for 8 months. Well, my wife lived up in Kentucky and got the houses sold and all this other stuff. And I put 67,000 miles on a personal vehicle in that first year. And I remember looking at Nate and he goes, so what's our marketing message? And literally when I was the CMO of the company, it was me, mm-hmm. an admin support person. And, a content coordinator.
Right.
That was the whole marketing team for STI Staccato.
Right.
That was it.
I remember when I came there, it wasn't soon after you it took over.
Oh, yeah. Sarge, it was, we were new. We were back. I remember my first SHOT Show. You know, we got there and I remember my first SHOT Show and you'll appreciate the story. So I go to SHOT Show. I load everything up in a trailer. I drove the whole booth to SHOT Show behind my truck. Mm-hmm. And we were slim pickings. Remember, 2018, we sold 5,000 guns. Mm-hmm. 5,000 guns. I mean, we were building, you know, probably 35, 40, maybe 50 guns a day.
Right.
Nate looked at me and he said, so what's our marketing message? I said, we make the world's best shooting handgun. And he goes, well, damn, kind of strong, ain't it? And I said, well, yeah. I said, and it's true. I said, and he's like, well, how do we quantify that? I said, we've won every shooting match thousands of times in the last 25 years. USPSA, IPSC, mm-hmm. all these things, you know, nationals. I mean, the 2011 platform, that's when we're saying the 2011 is the world's best shooting handgun. Mm-hmm. And so it's quantifiable, you know, and then when you shoot one, I don't care what you compare it to. If that 2011 platform, when you compare that to other guns on the market, mm-hmm. and we've had an impact, I think, in the industry wide is, you know, we're not worried about people who make 2011s. You just got to realize that there's, what we've done is we've added shootability to the industry. People are trying to make their guns more shootable, reducing recoil, faster follow-up shots, mm-hmm. triggers, grips, ergonomics, all these things to make their guns shoot better.
Right.
Because the days of like, well, just grip the shit out of it and hope you hit them on the third shot. Well, those days are gone because the world's changed. People got to be able to hit what they're aiming at. And so I think that's what we've done is we've stimulated the industry, stimulate the industry to make guns more shootable.
Before we take our last break. When you took the job offer from Staccato or STI at the time, you had to go back and talk to Jim and John. What was that conversation like?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because you were, that was, from what I understand, most people on the side. Once you're in, you're like family.
Yeah, very much so.
So what was that conversation like? Who'd you go to first?
So when, again, this is what's so great about those guys,
okay,
and why I so enjoyed that relationship and still do. They were happy, wonderful, super happy for me.
Because I know when I heard, I'm down in Florida, and I was like, what?
Yeah. And so it was like,
everybody's like, what? He's leaving. What?
Yeah.
Because nobody saw it coming. Nobody.
Super supportive of, and it was quick. Remember, I mean, this is in a matter of, I was at TriggerCon and, you know, 3 weeks later, I'm the CMO of freaking SDI.
Mm-hmm.
And, which is interesting is because when I had my little business, my little velocity shooter business, you know, I would try to carry, you know, STI style parts, you know, when I used to vend and stuff. And STI denied me a dealership. So it's funny. Then I come back and I'm running executive leadership team of the company, you know.
I can get parts now.
Exactly. Insert, you know,
So they were real happy for you.
Yeah, they're super happy, super supportive. And actually that's said awesome. That like, hey, amen, no, we're 100% happy for you. And, you know, still got a great relationship. And it worked out really cool. And it's been, I told John, I said, hey, man, anytime you want to get the band back together, man, I said, I'll do it for free now. You
that's
know, I
awesome.
Mean, I just like it. It's like being around. Him and I have a great, you know, what's funny is we have a great relationship.
Like right.
We have a lot of fun with each other.
Well, let's take one last break, mm-hmm, and let's get into the STI staccato movement and transformations, mm, and all the stuff that, you know, got you where you're at now. And we're going to finish up and see how it goes from there.
You got it. Thank you.
This week's podcast is also sponsored by Make Ready Nutrition. They have three products available for shooters that are 2-Alpha Performance to drink before hammer down, 2-Alpha Recovery that I use personally as a meal replacement for lunch with 34 grams of protein and is low carb, 2-Alpha Ammunition, which is next level hydration plus energy and amino acids for shooters, gym workouts, or pushing your body in sports and recreation. Whether you're in the Texas heat or in Arizona desert, 2-Alpha Ammunition works harder and endures longer. This unique formula is manufactured for shooters by shooters to replenish your body with electrolytes and hydration while helping aid in muscle recovery and providing fast energy. For 25% off your next order, go to makereadynutrition.com/discount/huntershd or enter huntershd at checkout for 25% off your entire order. makereadynutrition.com. Are you ready?
So you come into a new brand.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting ready to take the world by storm. And then the big announcement comes out. The timeline could be different. I'm just going based on my memory. That all of a sudden, we're not going to be doing race guns as our major platform anymore.
Right.
And the internet blows up.
Mm.
Just completely goes like the... I don't know. As the owners of the company that you're working for,
mm-hmm,
you know, these decisions are made and you've got to handle damage control, or we'll call it, we got to handle opportunities because it's, mm-hmm, not a damage. It's just the way the company was moving. Did you have a lot of sleepless nights or did you just let this roll off of you?
No. So here's it's really interesting about that. And this, I'm glad you brought this up. So when I first came in and we talked about that, we looked at our history, right? Our legacy in, right, the competitive shooting sports. I mean, where our mantra came from, you know, we build an incredibly soft shooting, accurate platform. Again, that's easy. If any other way to say it, it's just easier to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take the pure fundamentals of, and this is the 2011 platform, you take the fundamentals of handgun marksmanship. Okay. You line up the sights, squeeze the trigger without moving the sights. That's it. Everything else is mitigation of, mm-hmm, disruptive energy. So if I can reduce disruptive energy, you don't have to have the best grip. You don't have to have the best trigger pull, because as long as you take a little kid out there and they hold the gun all weird and pow, ting, and hit it. You know, mm-hmm, it's if I can reduce the amount of disruptive energy you have to manage, well, now we started talking about how do we move the brand forward. And so let's take this race technology. And this was not something that was dictated on high. This was a collaborative effort of everybody on the leadership team.
Okay.
Is like, let's take this amazing race technology and put it, and we identified two areas that we thought were deficit in the industry, the concealed carry market and the duty handgun market. So what better place to put performance, easier to shoot, reduced amount of recoil felt by the shooter, faster follow-up shots than in personal protection and duty operations.
Right.
And so we came out with the Staccato C and the Staccato P, world's best shooting carry gun, world's best shooting duty handgun. Mm-hmm. And it was purely by analysis of looking at the market. If you look at that time frame, 2018, 2019, pre-2020, that was the introduction of the micro gun. Like, it was, oh man, look at this. I can carry the noisy cricket. And I look at, I'm in my Speedo and I'm not even printing.
That's right.
Well, people forgot that you carry a gun concealed or you carry a gun for personal protection for that. You know, two things you don't want to find out in a gunfight. You suck or your gun sucks.
You can't hit anything with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was a perfect example. Many people probably listening are perfect examples. We come out here, we shoot our badass 2011s or our Tang Folios or our CZs or our SIGs, SIG Legions, whatever. We go out here, we shoot these guns, and then we go home, we put this little snotty little carry gun, and we go to the range and we practice for tens of thousands of rounds a year. And at the end of our practice session, we pull out our little insert size name gun, little bullshit carry gun, and we shoot a magazine out. We're like, all right, I'm good. And you're like, wow, that gun sucks to shoot. And you put it, and that's the gun.
Well, it's not fun to shoot.
It's not fun to shoot.
And when they're that small, it's like, whoa. Okay, I'm going to carry this because if I have to use it, I'm going to defend myself. But I hope I never have to defend myself because it's not fun to shoot. 100%.
There's no confidence in it.
Yep.
You know, now you've got guys making 45-yard shots in defense of, you know, active shooters. Mm-hmm. You've got, the world has changed. You have to be able to hit what you're aiming at. There's collateral impact. So that when you start thinking about carrying, I got a little itty bitty gun that I can smuggle. Well, we're not smuggling a gun.
Right.
It's like, you know, if you ask me, I don't get weird about printing, you know, like obviously I'm not going to be like, what up, you know, is it bazooka? But I mean, if I've got a little bump here or there, my object when it comes to carrying a gun concealed, three things, get the gun, aim the gun, shoot the gun. If one of those three things doesn't work, it doesn't matter how good you are in the other two.
Right.
So if you can't get the gun, well, I'm not printing because I'm, you know, I've got it duct taped to my stomach so nobody can see it. But how do I get the sumbitch out and use it?
Right.
So I have to be able to get the gun, aim the gun, shoot the gun. And so, and then also shooting the gun, it has to be something that I have the confidence to be able to hit the target. I have to have something I can enjoy going range and training with. And that's what I think has been so impactful when we introduced those two platforms to the market. And when you know, if you'd asked me and you in 2018, if cops were going to spend $2,000 on duty guns, I'd have told you no.
Right.
There's no way. However, you know, back 2016, 17, 18, cop comes out of the academy and he'll carry the same, you know, in some cities, you know, there's some cities he won't. He'll have to reload every day. But some mostly, you know, you're going to have, you know, they're going to have the same duty ammo in their magazine when they retire.
Same thing happened to me in 2018. Think anybody's going to spend $375 on a pair of shooting glasses? Hell no.
100%.
It's all about educating.
Yeah. It's value versus price. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, we've got police officers that the world has changed. Demands on them have changed.
Right.
And now you've got, you know, we sold over 12,000 guns to law enforcement officers last year.
That's amazing.
5,000 in 2018. Right. We sold 12,000 last year just to law enforcement officers. And you've got so many of the big...
And that's impressive, just that number alone, because so many departments have been stretched back and skimmed over because of politics.
Well, here's what's interesting is that...
And now it's growing again.
This is the majority of these, 98% of these are not department purchases.
Okay.
The individual officers are investing in their platforms.
Okay.
Once the gun gets approved by a department, these individual officers are investing, saying, hey man, listen, I'll spend $1,800 or $2,000 on something I'm going to carry every single day because guess what? I can hit what I'm aiming at.
All right.
And I can get home to my family because the world has changed. These guys are coming out of the academy and they're in a gunfight a month after they get out.
Right.
Because the world is nuts.
It is nuts. And it was just, you know, and to go back to a point when the decision you made to go to these two platforms and the other platform is going to be slowly taken down.
Right.
Did your boss at the time follow anything on social media?
Well, the biggest thing we ran into, well, it's kind of like when I first came to the company. You know, we come out, we say the 2011 is the world's best shooting handgun. And, you know, I had people reaching out to me, oh, la, 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 this. And, you know, you're an idiot, you know, even people I knew. And I was like, give us a chance. which was fortunate. I had a pretty good reputation in the industry. So I was like, give us a shot. Mm-hmm. Take a look at us now. We're like Virginia Slims. We've come a long way, baby. And what the, if you think back to what we, you know, we still made, we had the XL,
yep.
Which is, you know, I shoot that gun to this day. I own six of these damn guns. Mm-hmm. I have one in 40. I have them in 40. I have them in nine. So they're a limited gun. The thing that we eliminated was the open guns.
That's correct.
That's
what sent ripples.
Yeah.
Through the market.
The thing about open guns is open guns are like race cars.
100%.
Like they're guns that are road hard. They're all hand loaded. Mm-hmm. People are light springing. I mean, it's a very, very violent platform that takes a beating.
Yes.
And the amount of time it takes to build a super good quality gun. And we just didn't have the capacity.
Right.
That was really it. It was the decision was not, hey, screw them. We're like, listen, if we want to make STI Staccato, if we want to actually sustain our employees and grow this brand, I mean, we just built a 100,000 square foot manufacturing facility. Mm-hmm. We just opened up 750 acres of a Staccato ranch, which is an outdoor range facility.
Yes.
I mean, so that's the decision was made to be able to take this amazing performance and bring it to other people in other markets, not turn our back on anything like that, but just pure capacity. We didn't have enough people you're talking about putting those guns in the market. Like, how can we create, and this is interesting. I've heard this a lot too, is like, oh, well, Staccato's just a mass produced 2011. Their quality's not going to be the same as a custom gun.
I've been to your factory before. That's
you ought to see it now.
Yeah, I know.
And I used to, my return comment on that was like, yeah, and Mercedes is just a mass produced diesel. I'd rather have one hand built, you know, by whoever, you know. Yeah. And listen, I say that jokingly because there's amazing custom gun builders out there that are incredible artists.
100%.
And I own many of those guys.
Yes.
Or I've shot them or have owned them, and I've put hundreds of thousands of rounds on those guns. The thing about it is when you're trying to put the product into 35,000-40,000 people a year. And again, remember, we're a pimple on a pimple on a gnat on a pimple.
Correct.
And you're trying to bring this amazing performance into those sectors, into those other markets, and grow your business.
Right.
You just don't have the bandwidth for somebody. We're building right now about 170 guns a day. If we were building open guns, we would lose a third of our production.
Right.
And here's a cool thing too. There's so many amazing open gun builders in the market.
Oh,
I mean, there's incredible guys out there.
Yeah.
There's great guys out there to build open guns.
Yes.
And so we don't have the capacity to do that. And guess what we can do? We can also stimulate that market for them.
Right.
Because if we've created a small vacuum, it's a great opportunity for them to fill that vacuum.
Which brings us where we're at today. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation where with the introduction of limited optics, that was, let me go ahead and ask the question that, you know, everybody has accused everybody of from the USPSA. How much money does Staccato pay the United States Practical Shooting Association to bring in a new division?
Not $1.
Exactly. I knew the answer before I asked you, but I just want to hear.
Not $1.
No. Were you shocked when they started talking about it? Because that's what I've talked to other people that are 2011 and makers like that. They were actually shocked that this was even going to happen. People were talking about it on the interwebs, but nobody really knew it was going to come and really happen.
Yeah. We've supported matches and stuff. You know, we supported Area 4.
So much with Memorial 3 gun.
Yeah.
You've done so much with 3 gun matches and multi-gun matches throughout the United States.
Yeah, we never went to, you know, USPSA and said, hey, what's up with this $100,000 that we got in this hand, but I have this dot gun in this hand, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, man, I am, when it comes to shooting dots,
yes,
I'm invigorated again to shoot because I've always tried to stay in pretty good shape. I can still move pretty good, but I'm 54. So I'm not processing information visually as fast as, not that I ever did it fast, but I mean, I love the dot life, dude. I am like a brand new baby dot Christian.
Right.
Like I'm all about, like, I remember when I used to walk in darkness with iron sights and the Lord showed me this old dot, you know? And it's like, I'd be standing on a street corner witnessing about it, evangelizing.
Yeah.
I tell people, if you see me shooting a gun without a dot, some bitch fell off, help me find it.
Right.
I love it. It's super fun. I enjoy it. I think the division's going to be, but here's the thing about any competitive shooting sports.
Okay.
Is that you have to grow the sport. You have to create the inclusivity. you have to allow people to be able to come out and shoot stuff. And you have to allow, I mean, sometimes if you run off an entire segment of your, you know, your clientele,
right?
Okay, you're creating this vacuum. Are you filling that vacuum with any, or just like, we don't need it? We can't be unconsciously competent. We have to know why we're successful.
Right.
And we have to know what makes the sport. And the sport is the people. It's right. The people here.
You know, we heard this was going to happen. That's that national test that's going to all the devices on Wednesday, October the 4th. So this is a normal thing. This is why I love doing things live. So I'm not sure how to turn it off.
Oh, my God, me either.
Yeah, that's all good. There it went. But that's a...
Now they know where we are.
That is a hotline that was put out on October the 4th. From what I understand, looking at the internet and seeing what was going on about that was going to happen at 1:30 or a little close to it, whatever time it was going to be, like Amber Alerts and stuff like that about exploited kids and stuff like that. So that's a national... That happened on here, but all out throughout the United States.
Wow.
Every single device that they're out there shooting right now just went off, even if it's on silent. So they're out there shooting a competition right now, and everybody's phone, every single electronic device just went off right now.
Stand by. Beep. They just went.
Everybody's phone. They're saying stop. They're doing the start over.
Oh, my
gosh. That just happened everywhere in the United States. All right.
Wow.
Let's get back to it. So there's a lot of, you know, for lack of better words, gun tubers that are now getting into shooting sports, being able to use their staccatos, because staccato's done a great job with marketing to different platforms of people throughout the United States.
Sure.
Because I went to SHOT Show again this last year, went by a booth, staccato, and
it's crazy.
I'm like going, I had to go by and see a couple people, just say hi.
Yeah.
And it was like the floodgates.
It's a madhouse.
It went crazy. You were five or six people deep. I looked up one time because I was saying I was supposed to say to Michelle because we were talking about something. And all of a sudden, I just waited a distance.
Yeah.
I went by again, looked up, and I was like going, why is there 80,000 people? And Donald Jr. was there.
Yeah.
I'm like going, I never even stopped in the staccato booth last year. Are you getting a bigger booth?
Well,
y'all were the roadblock of SHOT Show. And that's fine. If you don't get a bigger booth, it's a great marketing thing too, because everybody's going to stop to see what's going on. If you get a bigger booth, then it doesn't look as busy. So were you amazed by how many people stopped by there? Or did you know it was going to happen?
Well, I'm...
But based on your marketing expertise.
I'm constantly amazed because I was there when literally I let's call it growth hacked my way into SHOT Show with $250 worth of McDonald's because we couldn't afford to have the stuff unloaded.
Yep.
When we put the booth together.
That's right.
And when we put the booth together, that the only face on there was mine.
Yep.
So we couldn't afford to pay anybody else.
Yep.
So to see that, there's a little parental connection to it. There's a personal investment in it, blood equity and sweat equity in it that is incredibly satisfying. And I think what we have done is we've realized, and I said this 2 weeks ago at an event, guy said, walked up, he said, so what are y'all doing here? I said, well, I said, the rest of these places out here are shooting bays, we're a hitting bay. And dude just looked at me. He goes, I go, yeah, it's like my dad used to say. He said, well, there's a reason they call it fishing and not catching. I said, well, same thing here. You go to the mother bays and shoot stuff. Here you hit stuff. And he was like, and it was a funny, I just made that shit up that minute, right?
I love that.
But I mean, that's the difference, is that there's people who enjoy shooting the guns. Mm-hmm. We do have an intimate connection with the customer. Yep. We're never going to be perfect. And I remember saying this back in the day, before I moved to the CXO position, was like, we're never going to be perfect. We're going to handle every problem perfectly. We've given guns away that we've made mistakes on, that we've not mistake on the guns, but mistakes on the customer experience.
Oh, trust me. Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, exactly. So again, you just got to be able to own it. You got to look at people. Mm-hmm. And it's literally one of our values is own it. Like to look a customer in the eye and say, my bad, bro. I'll get that out to you ASAP.
Yeah.
And I actually said that. It's a funny story. I said that to a customer, called me up, and he was irritated about something, and he was a dealer, and I'd forgot to put an order in for him. This is back when I was working business development. And I called him up, and he's a retired fire chief, and he's had been in the military, and our police chief, and this was his retirement thing. And I said, you know, I can't remember his name, but Jim, we'll say Jim. I said, Jim, are you married? And he said, yes, sir, I am. And I said, how long have you been married? He said, I've been married 26 years. And I said, well, Jim, I'd been married 26 years. So I've been married 26 years myself. And I said, listen, because he was pissed and there's no way I was going to calm this guy down. So I was trying to get out of his limbic brain.
That's right.
And get in somewhere else. And I said, well, Jim, I said, did you ever tell your wife, your lovely wife? I said, you ever tell your lovely wife on a Friday? He's like, honey, I'm going to have a couple beers with the boys. I should be home by 10. I said, and you show up at 2 o'clock in the morning in a clown costume carrying a pony.
The pony's a nice touch.
Continue. And he goes, and he starts to laugh. And I go, well, when your wife asks you what's going on, you don't tell her nothing. You don't make up a story. You don't try to talk about how this happened and you've rescued this pony from the circus and you had to sneak. You look at her and said, baby, I'm sorry. And I said, well, Jim, that's what I'm telling you. Baby, I'm sorry. I said, I fucked up.
Right.
And he just started laughing. He goes, well, all right, let's start again today. And that's the thing about it is you got to be transparent. You got to be honest.
Got to own it.
Yeah, you got to own it. If you don't, here's the thing about it is if your brand story is bullshit, it doesn't take long to figure out it's a lie.
Right.
If your brand story is authentic, if it's believable, if it's transparent, it'll then become shareable. You know, when people talk about, oh, we're going to make this shareable. Are you going to make it shareable? Or are the people that hear your story going to make it shareable? When you're talking about shareable, like it's easy, like a copy paste. Okay. Well, from an automation standpoint, great. But it has to be believable. It has to be honest. It has to be transparent. And you have to be able to connect with people and talk to them the way that they are expected. You can't blow it. You can't make it commercial. You can't fluff it up. It can't be a lie. Because today, I mean, people will catch you in a lie that quick and then you're done.
Yep.
You know, it's like I told a client one day that I was working with, I said, think of it as a restaurant. I can do everything to get people into your restaurant the first time. I said, but if your food sucks, getting them there a second time, I'm already overcoming an objection.
Yep.
And a historical objection that they have connected to emotionally, which is incredibly hard. So if I have to have that challenge, oof, good luck. Yeah, you have a lot of money.
Wow. So everything's growing. You built this huge facility.
Yeah. It's crazy. You got to come down there, Dave.
Yeah. Well, I was there last year with a little bit of prairie fire. I saw it being built.
Yeah. There's four berms.
Yes.
That was all we had. Now we got it. Incredible.
And just, and now with the prairie fire, you're a big part of that. You've got so much happening. How big is your team now?
So, well, it's funny. This is going to be hysterical. So Prairie Fire out in Nevada is its own entity. It's got a great leadership team there. Scott Miller, Mark O'Neill, Lanny Barnes is there, Hans. Yep. So Staccato, about 2 months ago, basically incorporated Staccato Ranch. So it's its own entity. It's a completely separate business. It's not... Though there's partnerships, things that we do collaboratively with Prairie Fire. Staccato Ranch is an independent entity. And so that team, you know, we're building out about 600 and something acres. Mm-hmm. Total's like 850 acres. But we're building out, when it's all said and done by the beginning of next year, we're going to have a 40-lane indoor range. And this is all members only.
Wow.
So this isn't free-for-all, riff-raff. It's a 100% members-only model. Mm-hmm. We're going to have 40 indoor lanes. We'll have 6 private lanes inside of that. We'll have like a lounge, classroom, small retail location. Then we're going to have 25 outdoor bays. 4 of those bays are special access bays to where if you came in with some celebrities who wanted to come in and shoot, we just shut the gate and run the black cloth. Nobody knows who's in there. Nobody knows who's in there shooting.
Which is important.
Yeah. We also have 3 sporting clay courses, 3 5-stand courses. One of them is actually our robotic 5-stand course. We're going to have rimfire golf.
Rimfire golf.
Yeah. So you step up to the tee box. It's all offhand.
The RGA Association.
There it is. So you step up to the tee box. There's 3 targets out there. There's a red, there's a blue, and there's a white, just like tees.
Yeah.
And it's all offhand. We'll have rifle tees and we'll have rifle targets and pistol targets. You go, pow, well, that's one stroke. And we have 9 holes of that we're building out too.
Oh,
it's so fun. I can't wait.
Excited.
Can you imagine everybody coming here? I'm like, I'm going to play 9. Is that okay? Yeah, knock yourself out. Go out there, your little box of 22 Wildcats, and just go play 9 holes. And then we're building a really impressive, like Cedar City. It's kind of like a, like a, not a Western town, but it's like a village town. It's got knockdown steel in it, and you, it's all maneuver area. And it's also segmented into three smaller sections, so you could actually run a stage in each small section. It's just a lot of cool stuff. We got, so when you come here as a member, and you decide to come out and you want to shoot, well, you go to an indoor range, you spend $50 and you can rent a bay. Meaning not a bay or a lane, right? You rent your lane for an hour and, you know, you get paper target, all stuff. Well, here, our members will have access to private bays. So we'll have a bay like this size, you know, where you got, you know, 10 yards by 25 yards deep. And it's actually a bay instead of a lane. Mm-hmm. And then we have the actual indoor range where we have 26 lanes that are actually public access. So now you have indoor, you have outdoor. You know, the thing about too is we want to be able to, we can't eliminate the environment. But we can do is we can manipulate the environment outside. So like if it's June, July, August, no problem. We've got commercial swamp coolers and we've got fans. So that way, if I can drop that temperature 20 degrees, you're going to shoot outside.
That's right.
And we've created this modular system to where we can take a bay and we can insert, you know, 10 lanes, 10 shooting lanes on it. Just put on forklifts, bam, and drop it down. It's pretty ridiculous. And when you see the bays now, just from when you were there, I mean, we got curb trimming around the base of the bays to prevent, you know, washout. We built fences and every one of those bays now has water, electric. We have air conditioned range huts there that for range officers. We've got overheads. Each one of our overheads that are at the end of the bay will have 6 to 8 spotlights per. We'll have cherries and berries if somebody wanted to run police training in there. And so now we can actually, if it's super hot, like if it's in August, we'll run matches at night. And it's, I mean, we have the Tactical Games Nationals is going to be there 5 November, which is going to be super cool. We back right up to DPS, the Department of Public Safety, where Texas law enforcement stuff is. We're right down the street from Dawson Precision. We've got a great working relationship with a winery down the street, the Florence Winery, which has got, they've got little rental houses and cabins and... and then they've got, you know, like 20 different rooms, these like really nice, especially boutique rooms right there. We've got a great relationship with them. It's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be pretty, pretty ridiculous.
And you're over all this marketing.
Well, I'm now the CXO of the ranch and Staccato. So two hats. And what's funny about the ranch team is, you know, you joke about my team now. There's the CEO, there's me, and there's two contract guys. That's where we're at right now.
Holy cow.
Well, we're building out. I mean, literally, we're at the point where it's so far in the infancy. We're getting the business plan was, and here's what's really cool is in my MBA program, this business plan was one of my MBA projects in my operational management class. So it's super cool to be able to take something I just, you know, I spent time developing and and running to, you know, through a professor and getting an A on it. And I was like, oh, wow, so cool. And then how cool is that to be able to go right from a academic environment into a real world environment. Like, hey man, I've got basically, we've got the shell of this. And so, partner that I'm working with there, John's incredible, great, great guy. We collaborate extensively. We complement each other on, with our, techniques, tactics and practices. And, and then we're just, as soon as we get the business models approved, the budgets approved, then we're just going to start building a team. And it's going to be, you know, it's like I was talking to Seeklander today about coming down and teaching and training. You know, come on, man.
He's doing a lot with another thing right now and teaching as well. I think through Live Fire or something, because he's getting ready to get off social media and just do Live Fire exclusively. So he's doing a lot of good things.
Social's tough, man, right now.
It is.
It is. It ain't going to get no better.
No. You got to find a way to, you know, get through the algorithms. And I've kind of working through that myself right now. So it's been kind of cool. So just got to think ahead a little bit. So,
got to be smart.
That's it.
That's strategic, man. Just got to be strategic. That's all.
New exciting products for the future at SHOT Show? I don't want to release anything can, but just or we just kind of hold what we got.
We're always, here's the thing about it is that just when they think they've caught us, we're over there.
Got it.
And it's we're so we're constantly we've got a great platform. But we're constantly innovating how to make it even better, how to make it even more shootable. You know, when people are like, oh, I made a modular frame polymer grip gun and it shoots really nice. And you're like, okay,
nice.
And then we come up with something completely that takes that to the next level. And they're like, son of a bitch. Damn it. Well, you have to.
Yeah, no, you always got to innovate.
Like Michael Jordan's first season and his last season were not the same Michael Jordan.
That's right.
He had to elevate his game because the game got elevated. And so we have to do the same thing. People are chasing us from a shootability standpoint, and we have to continue to remain an extremely shootable platform. It has to be an incredibly easy gun to shoot, and people have to enjoy doing it.
Nice.
So that'll always be a good thing.
Well, man.
It's a lot.
It was a lot, but I wanted to, like I said, it's probably last a little bit longer because I had more questions since a lot of more stuff happened. So we planned this back in 2018. Awesome. It just didn't work out. Exactly. Oh, no, 2019.
Yeah, 6 years later, finally able to sit down with
Brian. There's more stuff to talk about.
It's the same van. No, you didn't have this van.
No, I didn't have this van when I got started. No, I keep changing up.
I had a van
a little bit. Yes.
I had a van.
Yep. Yeah. You still got the van?
I don't. Yep. I miss that van. That van was so cathartic for me. And the guy who actually bought the van was a guy out of Utah that owned his own business. And he actually connected with me after he bought the van. He drove, mm-hmm. he flew down from Utah, bought the van and drove it to where he owned his own business.
Right.
And he called me up. He's like, hey man, listen, I'm just hope you don't mind me calling. We spent like an hour and a half on the phone because I built everything in the van myself.
I remember watching the videos like, wow. Yeah.
And he was like, oh my God, I'm so glad I got to talk to you. I said, listen, I didn't cheap on nothing, dude. I mean, like, that's birch plywood on the walls.
It's real
that's
wood.
That's chalkboard paint. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, I built this all out myself. I said, I did it right. You know, and he was like, oh man, it's so good. But he's got two boys. And he was like, yeah, they just want to go for a ride in the army truck. It was super fun.
It was a cool color. The tan was cool.
Yeah. I went back to a big Chevrolet truck again.
So just everything's going where it needs to be going right now. It's exciting to hear.
Yeah. We're going to stay tuned because once the Staccato Ranch goes live, we're going to start hosting events and activities there. We're going to have obviously USPSA club stuff there, mm-hmm. but we'll also have Sporting Clay stuff there. This venue is going to be the type of a venue that we could have, we could have country concerts at, that we could have like beyond the gun, beyond just shooting. Like, wouldn't it be nice to grab mama and come down and just
beyond the gun? You already trademarked that beyond the gun? I would. That sounds good.
That's a good idea.
I'd go ahead and get that one.
Yep.
You got about a week and a half before this releases.
So yeah.
Beyond the gun.
Well, it's actually, well, like beyond, the, beyond, I think somebody already has beyond okay, the gun, but
that
it's
sounds
probably
really good. I like
but
that.
But even more than shooting, you know, what is it? What it's like more than shooting, you know, it's like when you talk about the lens, it's like, I'm not polarizing any of it into, I don't want to make it. This is, well, you just come here and shoot. Well, okay. I want people to come to the Staccato Ranch because we're having a great event or we're having live music or we're going to do a barbecue festival and we're going to bring
experience.
In all the, exactly. It's a destination location to have fun.
Yep.
And you're 25 minutes from downtown Georgetown, which has got plenty of great food and hotels. I tell people, I said, if you want to know where Georgetown is and Florence is, the easiest way to do is land in Austin, drive north, you stop seeing Joe Biden signs and you're in Georgetown.
Yes. Oh, wow. What a world we live in.
It's going to be fun.
That's
man.
One thing I love about driving across the United States myself with everything I do. I see I still see Trump 2020 signs up everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like they never gave up. Nobody's stopping.
The world is a little bit interesting now, man.
It is, but we're going to get there together.
We are.
We're going to make everything stronger and keep promoting what we promote, and it's going to make it stronger. So. Any last words?
Nothing, man. I appreciate you having me on. You're always good. I'm so proud of you, and I'm proud of
thank you. You saw me when HD. You saw me when I first got started.
I'm so proud.
9 days of nationals down in Florida. You saw me for the first time, and I was like, "Ooh, what?"
I'm so proud of you and what you've done. I mean, you make a good product. You're a good man.
I appreciate
you've
that.
You've got a good business, and I know you'll continue to do well.
I just surround myself around a lot of positive people, and it makes it a lot easier. And you're one of them, buddy.
Well, I appreciate it so much.
If you have any questions for Tony, please reach out to him and through his website and everything at Staccato. You can find it online. And what is there a way to get in touch
all my social media is pretty easy. It's just Tony Pignato.
Yep, Tony Pignato.
Yep.
So reach out to Tony if you have any questions. If you have any questions for me to get to him, email me at info@huntershdgold.com, and I'll make sure to get with Tony myself and get him your questions. But thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of Hunters HD Gold Behind the Lens. And until next time, we'll see you at the range soon. Thanks, Tony.
For a complete written transcript of the Dr. Bill Show, go online to www.icarusmusic.com.
And welcome back to the Dr. Bill Show. Let's go to a caller who seems to be having issues communicating with his girlfriend. caller?
Yeah, I'd had this problem with my girlfriend. She kind of broke up with me. I've been doing everything right. Everything's been going great. We went out. We've gone out for, I don't know, I'd say a good 5-6 months. Everything's good. I mean...
But son, you've got to use communication.
I've done that. I mean, what else can I do? I mean, seriously, I mean, like...
Son. Some girls are just bitches.